but good story.
Okay. I know, so, you know, I might as well not, you know. We could just go out and enjoy the weather, but I'm afraid it's not even that kind of day, so you'll have to put up with me. Okay, so basically I'll be talking about, well, my title presupposes I'll be talking a little bit about everything, but what I really want to do today is to give you a sense of what is being done, I think, dynamically in Next to Leading Auto 1 of Varennes and why we care to do it. This is basically work being done with Christoph Wetterich and more recently with Gianfranco Bonini. And then, because that's a hard problem, and I'll show you why it's a hard problem in general, I think it's worth to think quite hard about the physics that one is capturing. And in the spirit of everything that we've heard in this workshop before, I'll try to connect the first picture of Next to Leading Auto 1 of Varennes equations to the physics of thermalization and transport. And in particular, I want to answer the question of whether when we formulate a set of equations at Next to Leading Auto 1 of Varennes, do we contain all the physics of thermalization and transport that we know is contained in an equivalent or in a definite formulation of kinetic theory. And if that formulation of kinetic theory gives us a calculation of dissipation coefficients, transport coefficients at leading order, then we know that that physics should be contained in our equations as well, and that we're doing something that's basically worthwhile. Okay, so the plan, that's the big theme. The plan runs more or less as follows. I'll be telling you about the physics that one can capture at Next to Leading Auto 1 of Varennes that for most of you after this whole workshop should be fairly obvious, and about implementations of how to pose the problem as a dynamical system. And then I'll actually focus on what we've been doing with the evolution of equal time effective action elements as a definite system, and I'll show you some of its properties. Some of them are heuristic that we've been finding out by evolving it. Some of them are fully analytical, and we can control them. I'll show you that that system is difficult for several reasons that you've heard before, for example, in Christoph's talk. But I'll go a little bit more into detail, not so much about the problems involved in the thermalization, but more about actually the characteristics of this dynamical system, what it does, for example, for long times. And then I'll formulate the one of Varennes in a slightly more general context. Basically, what we used here is an evolution of, is an equation for that's basically an equal time Dyson-Schwinger equation for the effective action. I'll show you that. I'll put the problem a little bit more generally, and I'll show you how to go from that picture to the Boltzmann equation and how one can discuss thermalization and transport not only in the strict Boltzmann equation sense, but in the sense in the generalized Boltzmann equation that comes out of this picture. And because we have calculations in certain theories like phi to the fourth, QED to some extent, we know what physics is involved in, for example, computing the relevant transport coefficients in those theories. So we can answer at least the question of whether that physics is contained in our 1 over n formulation. And so that's basically D. Okay. So when you talk last, you should try to more or less incorporate what people have been saying, and I think this is a very suggestive picture from Larry Yaffe's talk. And of course, here you have basically several methods that one can use to capture several different parts of bits of physics. What one would like to do is to have not to have to change method as one goes. And so basically, you see that, for example, one of our n expansions are missing from here, which is a point that I'll discuss a bit later. But basically, he argued that perturbation theory is good to describe a first decay, which has to do with quasi-particle decays. But basically, a leading order 1 over n is just an extension of this. So it would probably take you around here. But what he cannot do is describe this exponential decay, which has to do with the approach to thermal equilibrium and the later time tails having to do with hydrodynamic, long time tails and transport. And the reason why it can't do that is because, so let me focus on phi to the fourth for the sake of having an example, is that the diagrams that are included at leading order give you a real part of self-energy. And basically, to get this physics, one needs to go to a diagram that has an imaginary part. And so the next one is the sunset. And this shows up at next to leading order. And it's basically these imaginary parts, the decay width, that controls all thermalization and transport.
Is it typical phi to the fourth? Because if I have a phi cube, I would have imaginary parts at one loop.
Yeah, then one has to be more careful. But I'll just concentrate on this example for.
I would say 1 over n, what it gives you is the ability to consider large mean fields.
Yes.
Far away from thermal equilibrium. So on Larry's thought, he's only talking about the approach of this correlated equilibrium. So
That's right.
In that case, 1 over n is identical to some recent perturbation.
That's right. So it brings you a bit further out here. Basically, the other inference that maybe we've learned and we discuss very passionately out of this picture is that basically the classical theory is a full theory and can describe all these regimes, but of course we'll approach the wrong thermal equilibrium and we'll give you some quantitative aspects of your answers. They'll be incorrect, even though qualitatively you'll get all these behaviors. And I also do classical simulations as an example of a phi to the fourth theory, O2. Where we look for vortices in the glitch. That's just a nice picture. There's nothing to do with my talk today. Should always have a nice picture. Okay. So this Emil was basically jumping into here. The advantages of doing 1 over n is that basically one has a small parameter and that the 1 over n truncation has certain desirable properties. Namely, it conserves energy, we believe, at every order. And very importantly, it's probably the only approximation, modulo other variational ansatz, which are less controlled, that preserve quantum coherence and quantum scattering from first principles. Of course, in some sense, the Boltzmann equation preserves quantum scattering, but that's different. And of course, it gives us control through this small parameter. So, yes, is there a question?
Treating it like a coupler constant, anything known about it, that we have to renormalize it?
Well, you have to guarantee that as you evolve it, basically you set up a system in which you have a hierarchy. I'll go into this in excruciating detail. Yeah. Because the couplings, the effective couplings, can go large toward n, then if you have made an expansion, your initial conditions where you have hierarchy of variables separated by 1 over n, then that breaks down.
About denormalizing n.
Yeah.
No. We have a given symmetry, which is all n. So
yes.
That will not change.
But I think what you're asking.
Denormalize.
Yeah.
Just want to be difficult.
Yeah. But basically, what you're asking is this? I was saying that basically this gives you some control, but for certain sets of initial conditions and state, initial states of the system, you will see that any approximation to any order may break down. So in the sense that things growing larger than 1 over n, if they had to be 1 over n for your expansion to work. I don't know if that's what you meant, but that's what I understood you meant. Maybe you meant something completely different. Okay. So, but let me just try to provoke you a little bit in the sense that there are several ways of setting up a system at next to leading order. And this has to do with the choice, basically, of doing it at the level of propagators or at the level of effective action elements and the degree of resummation that one includes. So, for example, let me just write, for the sake of argument, I'll be using this throughout the talk, my Dyson-Schwinger equation for the full propagator. And this is written in terms of the inverse. So the inverse equation is written in terms of the inverse bare propagator, and there's a self-energy, and so the self-energy for phi to the fourth is of this form, where all lines are resummed, and there's a vertex here, four vertex, that's that guy. And I can write it in this form by getting rid of my inverse. Basically, this is my Dassin-Schwinger equation for the propagator. So, as is proposed, say, 94, one could take the leading 1 over n term to be the term that comes from using bare propagators in your self-energy. And you will see that one will get an equation which is of this form. I'll try to include all the authors since lots of them were here. Uh-huh. Okay. But, and so what that does for you is basically resum.
G already includes the one loop diagram.
Yes, yes. Everything already includes the tadpole. So all lines have that one resum. I'm just dealing with these because these are the interesting ones. Okay. And so what this does for you is basically do a resummation of this sort, where I include all these sunset diagrams in that way. But, of course, one could have done something a little bit different by keeping the self-energy evaluated over propagators, but taking the vertex to be just the bare vertex lambda. And what that would do for you is basically to resum the self-energy in all lines, also inside the self-energy. And so you'd have diagrams like this. One can do the full-blown case in which one also resums the vertex in a certain prescribed way. And so basically, you also include vertex corrections. Now, the philosophy of this last method is basically that the vertex is of order 1 over n plus corrections. Your full propagator is of order 1 plus corrections. And, for example, the sixth point is of order 1 over n squared plus corrections. So the idea is to truncate your equations by keeping all terms that include this and this as independent variables. And that gives you basically the... And then account for n symmetry and take the those coefficients at next to leading order. And so if one doesn't do this last step, you basically are doing a variation ansatz, which is a generalization of Hartree to next order, to two loops. And we also do that, for example, with this equal time effective action element. So we can... Yes?
I'm a bit confused. Mm-hmm. Because I took a large and it's a systematic approximation, mm-hmm. like that, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And now you're showing it up three different ways. It still matters how you resum this, how you resum mm-hmm. that.
Well, for the physics, you will agree that it matters what you put in.
Yeah,
right?
There is one systematic, but I have a
yes.
question.
It's also true that, for example, 1 and 3, the first one and the last one, both conserve energy.
There is not one systematic normalization theory. You redefine your coupling, and then you get a type of renormalization theory, which is different in higher order. I mean, this is just a misconception that there is only one. But there is not a unique small coupling. Just in as an observation theory. I mean, you may define your renormalized coupling, let's say.
There's no trivial resummation.
If you define your renormalized coupling by a vertex function, let's say it's external momenta, or for momenta zero and in, with the mass, this gives you two different perturbative expansions.
Yeah,
and the difference corresponds to a resummation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a resummation, but it's in a way not the resummation I call it non-trivial. In the sense that you take very complicated momentum dependent, for instance, you could resum mm-hmm. vertex functions by reevaluate, say, a one loop vertex function by putting all the full propagators in there.
Mm-hmm.
Then formally it looks like a one loop, but if you put all,
right,
it's not that kind of resummation you're doing there.
But you see that this, yeah, this includes several levels of resummation. At several variables, this is a 1 over n expansion. Mm-hmm. And the resummation implements the fact that they include higher.
But much more complicated.
Higher
I'm trying to answer his mm-hmm. question. directly, if you take everything in sight, every quantity which comes, the effect of action, the propagated, the inverse propagated, you can expand them all systematically to one over n. What he's talking about are different ways of resumming things. Mm-hmm. So you see, if you have g expanded to 1 over n and g inverse expanded to 1 over n, mm-hmm. then g inverse will differ at order 1 over n squared. If you want to maintain the exact property that g inverse is the inverse of g, then you have to do a resummation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
you want to look at it that way. But
It's not in that sense unique because you don't know exactly which way to do it unless you have some other input and other principles.
But the bottom line is that you're including different physics by doing this. And you're preserving, if you do this in a smart way, you're preserving, for example, the energy conservation of the of your dynamical system.
In all cases, you preserve renormalizability.
Yes.
But then, I mean, this is in gate theory, this is a difficult problem, especially with unstable particles. How do you resum in such a way that, for instance, the width and all that stuff is gate invariant?
Yeah. Well, I'm not addressing the problem of gate invariance here.
It's sort of by inspection, you come to a scheme like energy conservation, so you have to sort of use a lot of additional arguments away from the straightforward expansion.
Yes, but at the end, I'll try to justify this by showing you that these contain different physics, and different physics is necessary to describe, at the end of the day, different quantities that you want to compute. And so you should choose a formulation based on that.
It's, of course, in the gate theory. What do you do then?
Mm-hmm. Well, that should be thought about.
Many, many
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not really the point of what John is saying. I mean, in 5-4, you can do everything you want, basically.
So
and you don't have to do difficult, I mean.
No.
And that's all the methods which you can do in 5-4 will very likely fail in gate theory. Might be more difficult.
They're more difficult.
They're more difficult, but that's not the point here. Let's go
it's not the point, because if you're not interested in strong mean field, then it really is the same thing as a weak coupling.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Better or worse than
perfect. We know 1 over n for HD, for equilibrium situation.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to set it carefully. It's a well-established method, but there's no progress in principle.
Okay. Well, but there's some freedom there. That was basically what I wanted to provoke us for you to think about it. So that worked. Yeah. So let me now start discussing a specific implementation that was work done with Christophe et al. So basically, what we've done was to set up the evolution of effective action elements, where this effective action is the generator of one PI equal time elements. The equal time is important because it's not necessary to formulate the problem, and it gives you possibly different properties. And so the idea, this transference is a bit dense, is basically you have a phi to the fourth theory, and with an OM symmetry, and you can write Liouville-like equation for the evolution of your effective action in terms of operators, which are L classical and L quantum. The L quantum comes explicitly from the fact that pi's and pi's don't commute. Everything else is basically classical. And you see already why this is going to be a very hard problem to solve, that if one wants to include terms like this, which will include a vertex correction, one has to perform integrals, multiple integrals of the whole volume. So this will always be psi is that. Yeah, that's not here. Psi is basically both phi and pi, the mean fields, and that's a label. The A and B basically tell you that's one or the other. Okay. So one can basically iterate the equation to a certain order by performing a truncation. And what we did was basically to write an ansatz for the effective action. And so these are your effective action elements to order 2, and the physics of leading order 1 over n is contained in these elements. And then next to leading order is contained in these vertices, etc. come with these combinations of fields, of mean fields and momenta. Mm-hmm.
For the previous slide, how fast does it increase the computational power that you would just try it?
Okay. For each step in time, it goes basically, depends on the theory, of course. But to phi to the fourth, yeah, to phi to the fourth, it goes like, you have three volume elements that you have to integrate over. So, spatial volumes. So if it's in 1D, yes.
So that's really the next step. You go from sort of spatial volume to spatial volume cube.
So in phi to the fourth, that's the case, because the self energy has three vertices. It's three and a four vertex. So that's really the weight of the computation.
The homogeneous mean space is spatial volume squared.
Right. And this is because this theory is local in time, because if it weren't, then you also have to have integrations over time, which is the general formulation. So, Yekyoj is not quite long, but just to give you a feel, these A, B, and C elements have simple Yekyoj of motion, where we basically have hidden all the ugliness into these frequencies and coefficients, which are suggestive of damping, but they can change sign. And basically what you see here is that your frequency has the tadpole and then has this kind of sunset insurgence. And basically when we found these two coefficients, we were happy because we thought that this basically would be the quantities that would control the approach to a fixed point. But in the end of the day, I'll tell you a bit more about that. So one can also define what the propagator is in terms of these variables. And this is just for convenience. And, okay. So all these correlation functions correspond to symmetrized. Yes?
There's an N plus 2 there, looking like a renormalization of N.
Yes. Well, here we have.
Is it true just by inspection?
No, you basically have correlation functions of components. Once you impose the n symmetry, that gives you an n plus 2, right? No, that's right. So if, but I haven't yet taken.
This one has been taken into account.
Yeah.
That one really has been taken into account.
To next leading order, that will be important.
You may
right?
argue about the n plus 2 in gamma.
Yeah. Yeah, here basically you have that these are proportional to these elements. These are one order 1 over n. So there's a 1 over n here, and so one should really drop to 2. But here, basically, this comes with the 2 over n. But we haven't taken the large n limit there, so that's why it looks like that. It's the full thing. It's basically the form that generalized Cauchy would have at next leading order.
And you can also see it with the fund approximation, where you expand the number of one part of the other group of diagrams.
Yes.
Just to meet the city point functions.
Really?
It just happened that in the leading order of 1 over n, it gives you the full leading 1 over n. But you're not, you are not necessarily confined to go to large n.
Right.
You can also look at it as
so you need function. To have additional sort of intuition to get the nice set of.
Yeah, they both the yes, both the large n and something in which you keep these coefficients to be non-zero conserve energy, for example, again. So they have that nice property. So
what about the renormalization thing? What about the beta function, which has an n plus 8?
Mm-hmm.
The one loop beta function for lambda, for example. No, that's in the denominator.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are the. Yeah.
You put those all in by hand.
No.
No, this
has two loops, and the end is for all the.
Yeah, but you don't expand the end here.
No, you just do loops, and then you just verify
everything.
If
you expand the reason, you don't know if it's n plus 8 or.
No. I mean, to make sure what you do, you just compute the loops for arbitrary n.
Yeah.
This gives you this factor n plus 6 and n plus 8 and so on.
Yeah.
Now you are free to say I can drop all quantities which are all of one of n.
Right, very good.
And we actually use both.
Yeah.
But if you want to compare, say, with your four model, which is relative to electric weight,
mm-hmm.
then that is a lot.
Yes.
That's why we
yes, but we're not there yet. Okay. This is just basically the most general system in which you keep the four-point functions and the two-point functions. Okay. And these equations are uglier. And basically, as Christoph discussed over 2 weeks ago, this system has stationary distributions which are which solve the equations of motion, and these have these forms in general for. So basically, you see that this condition is satisfied in thermal equilibrium, for example. So is this one, and all the odd quantities have to be zero. This is basically a coupling static Diefenstringer equation, but then there is no constraint on some of the variables like S and Z. So in that sense, one has a full manifold of stationary distributions, and in which equilibrium is just a particular point. And having seen that, we tried to do linear analysis in this system, in which we didn't keep the momentum dependence of the couplings, we just took them to be constant for simplicity. To write this, I have, but basically, otherwise, there'll be convolutions of these things. There'll be an integral over here, but the form will be the same.
So it'll be an integral function, an integral equation on all
these. Yeah, where you see S and where you see Z, sometimes, in this case, for example, there's an integral that convolves these quantities. But apart from that, it has the same form.
But for example, if I compute U as P, Q, and W, for example, at three momentum P1, P2, and P3,
mm-hmm.
what momentum of P star and S star should be there?
Well, you have to look back. Basically, I don't recall that offhand, but you can work through it. I think we have the equations. We can discuss. Yeah.
First
term
will be lambda and P of Q1 plus P of Q2 plus P of Q3.
Yeah.
So you
have to, yeah.
So that, is there a whole class of solutions?
Yes, that's the point. So basically.
By momentum dependence of the U or so. And then the your opposite flow. Can you choose that, or is that
you can choose potentially arbitrary functions, S and Z.
That's the point here. So you only have
arbitrary momentum, and then for each one of them, and E of Q is also arbitrary. For each one of them, there is a point solution.
So you basically have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 non-zero quantities, and 1, 2, 3 constraints.
Yeah,
for each momentum. So, so we've done linear analysis as well around the system, and we found that all modes are purely oscillatory. So, in that sense, there is in that linear analysis approach to the thermal equilibrium point, or any fixed point for that matter. Okay, but so then we realized that, of course, to see anything in the system, one would have to go beyond linear analysis, and the simplest way to do that is not to take the full field theory, but to actually do anharmonic oscillators, in which all the momenta in these variables is all the momentum dependence disappears. So what I'll be showing you in the next two or three transparencies are some of the properties of the dynamical system of anharmonic oscillators, and that system is not expected to thermalize because it has an infinite number of conserved quantities, basically. But it still has properties that we expect to be carried over to the field theory. And so what you see here are basically this is an initial condition that's close to the fixed point manifold, and we had predicted the frequencies of oscillation of quantities of 4-point functions and 2-point functions. And basically what you see here is the power spectrum of those oscillations. And these are those quantities, those frequencies. as we evolve it further, of course, these can excite other modes, and that's what you're seeing here.
So should you compare this with like an immature equation, the resonant effects?
No, you don't have, well, that's usually, for example, when you have a mean field that's oscillating and that's sourcing something that has that same natural frequency or something like that. Whereas here you only have the two-point function.
The prediction, how is that?
You mean about this prediction? You're doing linear analysis, so it's an eigenvalue problem that generates a certain set of frequencies of oscillation. And there are basically three independent frequencies, but two are degenerate here. These are degenerate in the linear approximation. It's just a peak here. And for the four-point function, there's double that frequency, which is what you're seeing here.
This is at a certain time. So.
Yes, it's integrated. It's a power spectrum. This one?
Yeah.
So it's integrated over. Yeah. Integrated. It's a Fourier transform over a time interval. Right.
But you say when you evolve it further, what do you mean by that?
But if you evolve it much further, then sometime. In time. So you can take a chunk of time and do the Fourier transform, see what frequencies are there and so forth, because the system is basically periodic, as you can see. This reproduces itself as well, as you go further.
You just take a chunk of time and then...
Fourier transform, that's right. So if you start, basically the observation is that if you start close to the fixed point, you know, you can run it basically forever, and it oscillates forever, and nothing much happens. However, for more generic sets of initial conditions, it happens that the couplings can grow large, and can grow large toward n. So basically, the separation that you had done in the initial conditions, that the two-point functions were of order 1 and the couplings were of order 1 over n, can actually not be conserved by dynamics. What we plotted here was the, we have a one parameter set of initial conditions, and we plotted the time that it takes for the system to reach basically when U is of order 1, or its contribution to the energy reaches a certain number. And what you see is that it's extremely dependent on initial conditions. In fact, the system has some sort of chaotic behavior in that sense. So these are four choices of parameters with, for the purely classical system, in the sense that, again, P's and Q's commute, and for two sets of temperatures in the quantum system as well.
Have you compared with the classical system? Is there a way to compare with the classical system?
Yes, and there's a way of computing to the quantum system for n equals 1 as well. Because you can solve the Schrödinger equation for this case. We haven't done that, but there's work.
It's chaotic probably, but only at sufficiently high energies.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it not?
I don't know. I know that the quantum system is not chaotic.
It's not chaotic.
I don't think it's chaotic. It's just an harmonic oscillator. I don't know. Yeah. But the point is, it had been seen, for example, before by Cooper and collaborators, that the leading order system for it's slightly different, but basically containing oscillators is chaotic in some sense, and this shows you that the next leading order system also has an extreme dependence on the initial conditions. So, for example, these steps that you see here are genuine. We change the integrator and the time stepping, and they're absolutely reproducible. So, but you see that basically, as you change this parameter, the time for which that crosses one sometimes changes abruptly. And basically, because this controls more or less the unharmonicity of the system, as you go to large numbers, this time, or to large deltas, this time is much shorter. So that's what you're seeing there. In fact, it's a little bit worse than that, because if one really runs the system for long times, after the couplings grow larger than 1, so the couplings over n, couplings which should be of order 1 over n become of order 1, then sometimes the system actually looks like as if it has instabilities. Remember that the energy is always conserved. But what can happen is that, for example, U takes off and starts growing, and another coupling typically will grow in some other opposite direction so that it compensates for it and the energy stays constant. But nevertheless, it looks like if you look at one variable, the system has an instability. And eventually, that means, for example, that your frequency also goes negative. Into this regime, of course, you can't do numerics very well because everything starts breaking down. But into this regime, we have changed the integrator, changed the time step, done exhaustive tests, and this line is always strictly reproducible. So it seems to be an inherent property of the system, but we don't have a good explanation for it. It's just a heuristic observation. And there have been observations along the same lines by Cooper and collaborators in systems that have to do with this. Yes. Of the truncated system, not of the original system.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask, there have been these realization group studies, like the flow equation or other ones,
But renormalization group is usually about getting a solution. So it's a method, the dynamical renormalization group anyway. Is that what you're referring
no,
to?
No, I'm just talking about the not the static.
Okay. Well. So you're suggesting that that could
I
be one? Okay.
It reminds me of that effect. You have these flow equations or other separate group equations, and you plug in some form of your solution, which is maybe one gradient and one gradient. So and if you have a polynomial approximation to the non-gradient term, you get bad results.
Right. This is slightly different, but in some sense we're trying to mimic an exact solution of the exact system by a certain number of... Yes.
In the effect fraction.
I mean, normally, if you just think about the equilibrium properties, a polynomial approach shouldn't work too badly since you ask there's no criticality in such a harmonic oscillator system, so... If you start with an antimatic ensemble, this should typically polynomial approach would work relatively well. At near equilibrium, actually, it works, it never goes outside. But when you are too far from equilibrium with your starting condition, then this is not guaranteed.
I mean, this doesn't happen always. Yeah. For a large number of initial conditions, especially close to a fixed point of stationary distributions, we seemingly run forever, and this doesn't happen. But sometimes, and on a different sense, for quite general other sets of initial conditions, this does happen. So you cannot... It's telling you about your initial conditions, but it's also telling you about your truncation. And as this happens, you also get that your power spectrum becomes quite wilder. But to obviate that, we try different integrators that should be able to deal with the stiff power spectrum. And the results are absolutely reproducible with different choices. So these properties are just about the time evolution. And even though one may expect that some things may be different in the field theory, it raises concerns that the long-time behavior of systems like this may not be fully consistent, at least generally. Okay, so... Of course, one simple way of trying to see what happens in the field theory is to do it. And so to some extent we have done that. These are earlier plots, and there are some newer plots that I don't have any that Gianfranco Bonino has been working on. So this is just an example of an evolution leading one over n and next to leading order one over n, but with one of these good initial conditions where you start very Gaussian. And what you see... Yes?
About the previous thing, if you say you can start with a better plot, like in the effect of potential, you can include only low, you know, 5 squared, 5 squared, 5 squared, and then compare it with including more terms. So here you could start with, say, not including all the 4-point corrections. Do you then see that it goes wrong, and if you include them, it doesn't go wrong, but it goes wrong later with 4-point?
mean, is this an improvement to include these?
In some circumstances, yes. In other circumstances, when it just blows up, it isn't.
You do not include 4.5. That's just a block.
Yeah. Okay. Unless your system is very Gaussian-like. You will get it wrong.
You have normalization, otherwise
you
can have C.
By wrong, I mean in quantum mechanics, of course,
you can
solve the structure as compared to the exact solution.
Mm-hmm. And it's been observed that in some cases the next to leading order is better than the leading order.
Yeah, that's what my
right?
Idea.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
However, it's also been observed the very sensitive dependence on initial conditions, perhaps. Also happens with n. So if you start with the same initial condition and you vary n, you also see that sometimes you hit these instabilities and sometimes you don't. But the dependence on n is also discontinuous, or at least has jumps. Well, it's discontinuous. So that's also quite unnerving, right? So for large enough n, usually the system becomes regular. But large enough may mean 60, 80, something like that, which is not necessarily the regime in which you want to work. Okay, so I should have said that before, but so this is just an example of next to leading versus leading order evolutions. But as you can see, basically you're describing a very regular system, and the next to leading order doesn't include. Of course, it's still coherent, so you still see these coherent oscillations. You just see a difference in the frequency and in the decay of this oscillation. But the pictures are not qualitatively very different from what you find. N in this case was 10, and lambda was, I think, 2 or something like that. So the effective coupling is about 1/5 or something. But I emphasize that it depends both on the initial conditions and the value of N. Okay, so this is just a later time evolution. You see that basically that at the end of the day, you get a different time average with one method and the other. And we can also have, these are a particular set of evolutions in which we didn't keep the momentum dependence of U and we determined the energy self consistently. So again, it's another level of approximation. But for these initial conditions, it was regular. And you see that, for example, these couplings also go. This is time odd, so it has to oscillate around zero. U, basically, an asymptote. We have seen, though, that in this very same system, again, if you change the initial conditions to be something milder, or you change so that you start with, or they are more anharmonic, you can also have blow-ups. So, in view of these problems, I think it's useful to think a little bit harder and see what physics one is really including, so that since I think I've convinced you that one has to work very hard and requires all the intuition that one can possibly get from the physics one is describing, then it's useful to know what physics one can describe. And so probably the best framework to think about that is kinetic theory that contains the same physics. And in that case, we know that if it contains the enough physics, then you should see thermalization and transport in that context. And so the question we should ask ourselves is, when we go to next to leading order 1 over n, do we contain the physics of thermalization, and do we contain the physics of transport coefficients, which for this theory are basically the viscosities, the bulk and shear viscosity. So what I'll be showing you next is by now quite standard. Bernd Euler, for example, did a similar derivation in this talk. I think probably some of the original material is in Karnoff and Behm in non-relativistic form. But basically one goes back again. So I'll show you how to go from basically 1 over n, or more generally from Dyson Schrödinger equations, to a kinetic formulation, to a generalized kinetic formulation. And the problem is that, of course, one won't have an equivalence between these two formulations and can only do it this way, but not the other way. And so if we find at the end of the day that all the physical processes responsible for transport and for thermalization are included in the corresponding effective kinetic description, then we have then that's a necessary condition for the 1 over n to display the same properties, but it's by no means a sufficient condition. On the other hand, the reverse applies. So, okay, so let me write again the Dyson-Turing equations for the propagator in a slightly different form from what I showed you before, like this. The self-energy to 1, or the 1 over n is this. There's, of course, also the tadpole I haven't included here. Well, it's there, but it's not here. And it should be written like this, so it's it should now be obvious to answer your questions about how non-local it is. I basically have to do integrations here over these three volume elements in space-time.
In the homogeneous case, it would be
true. Yeah.
The translation invariance.
Yes, you can use that to simplify it. But it's still three.
It's
still
three.
Yes.
Inhomogeneous,
then you really have to do it for every point. Yeah. And this is for each step in time you have to do this.
Inhomogeneous goes up even power.
Yeah.
Homogeneous goes up odd power. 1, 3.
Yeah, you don't escape these integrations. You always have, for this theory, three integrations.
Always take
the one
momentum
away.
One away. That's all.
Okay. So, I go to a good old CPT formalism, and that provides me a context for time ordering of these Green's functions. And so I do that. So this is the usual one that lives on the upper contour, lower contour, so it's anti-time order, and the other ones are the cross terms. And I also do a similar ordering for my self-energies, like this. And basically, the at leading order, the tadpole is local. So that's why it's so simple to do it. Okay, so when I do that, I get equations for these retired and advanced propagators in this form. And I can subtract them to get a prescription of that form. The subtraction is important because that's necessary to then go to slower variables. So at this point, these are exact, but they're horribly non-local. And this is the problem of the formulation next to leading order in general. And so it's very hard to solve the exact, solve these exact equations for a large system. In general, you cannot do it, so you'd better know that what you're doing has all the correct physics that you want to describe. I think in time-dependent problems, basically, we're all trying to do it, right? So I don't. Yeah, for time independent, I think there are certain examples where you have to do.
Up to the, say, replacing the 4-point good by the bare one and then trying to exclude something there.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
The next order 1 over n, there was, for example, a paper from the early 80s on the potential.
Right.
Beyond 1
order. Yeah, so these equations basically give you a mass gap equation that you can then solve. And there are also people who do vertex resummations for other purposes. So there is more experience there, but the properties of the time-dependent system, I think, have never been addressed in any detail. So again, to go to the Boltzmann picture, one goes to these Wigner coordinates, which we'll introduce at the end of the day, scale separation between these fast coordinates and these slow coordinates. And the expectation is that your quantities should be peaked around small separations of this variable, and therefore one will be able to expand in powers of this. High powers will be even smaller, so one basically keeps the leading terms. And one can have, of course, define Fourier transforms relative to sets of coordinates, go like that. And similarly, one describes the self-energies in terms of these variables. And one can see that the boxes, the difference of the boxes that I had in the previous equation, basically just describe, they reduce to a product of derivatives in the slow and fast variables. Okay. So once one does that, one has to expand all quantities. So this is just probably one of the simplest examples that my self energy, my difference between one loop self energies are when expanded given by a term like this plus high order terms, and when imposes boundary conditions so that when this time goes to minus infinity one has equilibrium. This is of course important, otherwise one doesn't get the correct result in the end for that. So what that allows you to do is that when these propagators reduce to the equilibrium case, then they should have this form where plus or minus is usual for bosons or fermions, and A is a spectral function that's given by this discontinuity of the propagator, or in terms of these advanced and retarded, just given by this expression. And the decay width is also a discontinuity for the self energy. Okay. So if one does that, one can show that the equation has an exact solution with a spectral function of this form. So basically, one has accounted for real parts of self energies and decay widths. So you're allowed to be off shell in the sense that. You don't have a delta function A. It's also easy to show that at that level, this is a solution. That the so F was before was the distribution. F has a solution as F equilibrium, being the Bose-Einstein distribution in this case, and the propagators also have written in terms of A and F also have their equilibrium forms. It's also easy to show that you can conserve the medium and that you have local equilibrium solutions and you can do sound propagation. With a bit more work, one can probably also compute transport coefficients in this setting, but I don't think that has ever been addressed in any detail. And so basically, this is not really the equations I've written for you. It's just an expansion of your exact Dyson Schwinger equation to first order in these in the first variables around zero, but it basically is still a Dyson Schwinger equation plus this expansion, and it has in particular solutions that, to be self-consistent, include the real parts of self-energies, and this is basically the imaginary part of that collisional self-energy. And so it's still not what a Boltzmann equation usually looks like.
But this expansion in R is on zero. Is that the same as a gradient expansion for the
basically variable? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, basically that's what it is.
And this way of doing it, do you have to make an approximation for the four-point function? Do you still have to do that?
Yes, I have to expand my four-point function the same way I've done the two-point function in terms of fast and slow variables, and where it appears I have to expand it. But I haven't done that explicitly here.
Is that all you have to do? Because
and I have to have a self-consistent equation for the four-point function, which I have not been showing you. But I will discuss that in a second, because I'll show you that it's important to have that to describe all the physics of the...
You could calculate.
Yes, of course.
Truncate somewhere on the six-point function.
Yes, that's set to be zero. And so the equation for the four-point function self-consistent only involves the propagators in the four-point function, similar to something I showed you many transparencies ago. But I'll get back to that. So basically, the form is a generalization of a Boltzmann equation where you can propagate off-shell. And so this is the bottom line I was telling you. It's basically a Dyson Schwinger truncated to order 1 over n plus an expansion in small values of little r. Okay, so let me just compare what that has to do with the Boltzmann equation. Usually when one writes the Boltzmann equation, one does it slightly differently. And in practice, that's what it's used to compute all transport coefficients. So what one does is to solve the Boltzmann, basically the Dyson Schwinger equation that I've shown you, in the absence of the collision term, of the term that gives rise to the imaginary part of the self-energy. When one does that, one basically just gets a non-shell condition for your spectral function, where it includes the real part of the self-energies up to whatever you included. And then one uses this form of the spectral function into the collision term, which involves retard and advanced propagators. And then one can do the integrals over frequencies over these p-naughts. And that will render the Boltzmann equation local in time. So, so here we go again in detail. What I solve is for something like this, where this includes my real part of the self-energy, principally. So I get something like this. That also means that my propagators will be of this form, with A written in that form. And that will allow me to write my generalized Boltzmann equation in a form like this. And so, remember that A is basically the delta function. I can use that delta function to integrate over frequencies, and I get an equation of this form at the end of the day, where I've set basically all the propagators that go into my self-energy on shell. And that is done here, for an example. So I'm just using the lowest order. The lowest order expression for the 1 over n self-energy. And when cut to give me the imaginary part, this just gives me a 4-vertex, which describes processes of two particles to two particles. When I do that, basically this is the expression. When I substitute the propagators with the spectral function, as before, I get equations like this, which is just my amplitude, which to lowest order is that. And when I integrate over the frequencies, I basically just get something of this form, which is the familiar form of the Boltzmann equation, now in terms of exclusively of the distributions. So this is not consistent in the sense that we use a different approximation to derive what the solution for one side of the Boltzmann equation is, and then substitute that on the other side. And as I hope I convinced you, it's not necessary to derive an equation for the propagators, but it's computationally easier. And also, basically gives you this picture that particles propagate with a certain effective mass in between collisions, and at collisions, they just collide and exchange momentum, and off they go again. And basically, you have this scale separation between the mean free path and the collision.
The collision theory. He emphasized the importance of the consistency condition, mm-hmm. having the zero modes, which had to do with energy conservation.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
correct.
When one does it this way, do you get this condition or not? Linearize around.
Yes, well, his point was actually about the form of your propagators when you write the Kupu formula. So basically then you have an effective vertex which has two propagators at the same energy momentum, and when you take that limit you get that you have one of these pinching poles, and you better have the width there, otherwise you'll get the wrong result. You just get no result. But if you do it this way, it's actually not necessary to do that. All you need to have is the real part of the self-energy in your collisional integral to get a finite answer. So you have basically your thermal masses in your... Yes. But nevertheless, it gives the same result. And
so it's
understand
that better.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
in general, yes. Uh-huh. In general, yes. So basically, you have a medium, and so therefore, yes, you can depend on it. in general it will.
But you have the equation.
Yes.
The term
yes.
That.
Yes. But you see that what I'm trying to emphasize is that there's a fundamental difference in the way people usually solve the Boltzmann equation and the way one would solve the Dyson-Schwinger equation even after this gradient expansion. If one solves it consistently, one has a
I just want to know where the difference then, the final result is different.
Yes, well, nobody has calculated, for example, so let's focus on a quantity, a transfer coefficient using the first formulation without going to the Boltzmann equation. So in that sense, I cannot give you a number that compares. What people argue is that the effects of the width and the propagators that you put into your collision term are subleading. And therefore, when you compute via the Boltzmann equation, you don't need to have them there in order to get a finite number at the end. I'll argue a little bit about what you're not including, but to get a finite number generally, in a weakly interacting theory, all you need to include are real parts of the self-energies and your propagators that you put into your collision term in the Boltzmann equation. So I'll go into that a little bit. But so the difference that will appear will be subleading, or it may be leading in a system that's now more strongly interacting, or for that matter, in the presence of a strong external field or something.
When
Sanghyun
Rho is generic equation,
mm-hmm. It has the thermal mass, but not the thermal width. Yes, the thermal mass is in there, in the real part of the self-energy.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have a non-shell condition with that thermal mass.
So you can introduce plastic particles which have a real mass that is quite easy to extend, and all properties of the Boltzmann equation that preserves energy, as well as an H theorem, also important, you can write down an entropy.
Mm-hmm.
Then
the
for
the
system are preserved.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficulty is how to consistently include the width.
Mm-hmm.
So the Boltzmann equation,
the
width comes
in
by collision term.
Right. So basically, you take the collision term to give you the width at a different level that you take it.
So you have an equation that has the width in it.
Yes. But that equation, even there, okay. So I can solve it that way. And
right.
I said that you can show that that has the right equilibrium properties, and you can solve, for example, for a weakly inhomogeneous medium for sound propagation. But I've never seen the next step, which is to compute now the damping coefficients, the transfer coefficients in that setting. I think the reason why people don't do it is that because it's more complicated. The acres are more non-local.
Could you derive hydrodynamics from it?
Yes. So you can it conserves steam you knew, and it obeys thermodynamic equations. Yeah. So now, basically, you express steam in you in terms of your propagator and your vertex, and you can show it's conserved, if you've chosen a good truncation, but I'm assuming you did.
Well, what part is that the time of the possibility is now coming?
Well, at the level of that gradient expansion.
That is
before.
Not to go.
Well, it's still... Well, in the sense that the collision integral has one diagram and it's time reversed, if you evolve the Boltzmann equation,
it's
so that at that point it's time reversal. Yeah. Yes, it's at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that always takes you to equilibrium.
Yes.
Yes, and to remove that step is basically equivalent to then solving the full Dyson-Schwinger equations in the sense that we've been trying, but in the more general sense that one has time non-localities and time and different times.
Why time don't have this condition, which I thought was basically a relation between the real and the imaginary
mm-hmm.
part of the self-energy, but you tell me I don't need that condition.
To solve it via the Boltzmann equation, you don't need that. And basically what he shows at the end of his paper is that there is an equivalence once you write these propagators like this, and you can write the vertex equation the way he had done it via the Kubu formula. And then you can show that there's basically there are suggestive expressions that if you do certain levels of substitutions, one thing is the same as the other. But at this level, basically the width is being given by the fact they included collision terms. That's all you need. And in the collision terms, you only need to have propagators that have real parts of self-energy. But the fact that you put in a collision term is what's giving you the width. And that's enough. Basically, he has to build up his propagator up to the level at which he has a width in order to do it via the Cooper formula. And that's much harder than start with something that has collisions explicitly.
Language, I don't see that problem.
No, that problem doesn't come up because you've included a collision term.
I thought it was at the Boltzmann level because he was talking about solving the integral, equation that you get from the Boltzmann.
So yeah, but you have to do that at the end. Yeah.
But that's where the consistency condition was, not in the Cooper formula.
But if you replace in the Cooper but in the Cooper formula, to get consistency, in the Cooper formula, the real field operator that's there has to be replaced by a linearized kinetic operator that you get from the Boltzmann equation. And this whole proof circles around to show that that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
That effectively, that evolution operator in the Cooper formula is the Boltzmann operator, which is the linearized kinetic operator.
So if you include the collisions in the Boltzmann equation, you have that automatically. That's what it boils down to be. But
is there a relation between this R expansion and a narrow width approximation? Because here you're treated as completely separate.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be a relation there.
Well, not necessarily, because at the end of the day, your width is whatever your physics state left. In the diagrams that you left. No, gamma can be whatever it is.
No, but if gamma is very, very,
very broad,
very broad, then
yes. Yes, then your whole approximation, yeah. No, but that also has to do with the Onshore condition. That's a further assumption on the Dyson-Schrödinger equation in order to take you to the Boltzmann equation.
In the Boltzmann equation, you would say I have a clear quasi particle.
Yes, and that's basically what Dam's saying. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but this R expansion can sort of, you said it's narrow, distribution is narrow. Now, is this only narrow in the narrow width case, or is it?
No. The width
is it related?
No. It has to do with the fact that the system is. Yeah.
Maybe.
But it has to do, in a sense, it translates to the fact that the system is weakly coupled. If you have a strongly coupled system, then you can't say that. So.
No, but you could have a weakly coupled system in which there was big gradients.
Yes, and that's typically, for example, what happens when you have external fields that are strong, for example. And in that case, one has to do a better job with the whole picture. Yes, so, sure. Yes.
All right, the local Boltzmann equation gives you, of course, a consistency requirement. And you know that the Boltzmann equation is the only really true integrated with coupling.
Right.
And the collision current is low, which means that the gradients have to be small compared to the typical collision.
Right, so things are related at the end.
Which means width approximation in the end.
Right, because also weak coupling, of course, controls the size of your width. But.
So you can do this, for example, you have.
Well, not in a strict sense, but in a more generalized sense. I mean, depends. Again, you have to say if that gradient expansion is gonna hold. But given that that holds, then I can have a more general Boltzmann equation. Well, Dyson-Schrödinger equation that.
So
that includes more effects.
When the
right. The Onshore condition is, of course, about free propagation and collisions in between them. So that, I've been arguing, you don't need to keep. But if you don't keep that, you have to work harder at the level of solving the equations. In particular, you have to deal with time non-localities. If I were to solve my full Dyson-Schrödinger equation plus gradient expansion, I have to still deal with that.
Yes, but you still have not answered my question.
Okay.
Is there a situation where this approach is applicable when the Boltzmann approach is not? relaxing in the when your interval is reliable.
Well, at the level of any computed quantity, I cannot give you an example. But you can imagine a situation where considering off-shell particles is a better approximation because of stronger coupling, for example. And in that case,
in
this helps you.
Just an example. One
stronger coupling, pick any theory.
Strong coupling 5-4, for example, is not because the collision happens too frequently. When the width is big, then the collision happens too frequently.
You'll pick QCD then or something. Well, I think.
But what if you had initial data with large gradient? So you couldn't do the gradient expansion because of the Poisson equation.
Sure, in that
but
sense, you have to go back to the beginning.
Then the principle idea of classic Schwinger approach is not reliable.
If you want a harder problem, typically you have to go up and start with a more complicated theory. If you have a weakly coupled system where the on-shell condition is good, you go straight to the Boltzmann. But
when Sanjan is talking about transport properties, he's always looking at zero momentum behaving. So then this issue doesn't really
matter. Right.
Yeah.
They're all small anyway.
Yeah, and the point is that basically the linearization of the Boltzmann equation, which is something I'm trying to say here, so basically consider a small perturbation, this is the way basically the linearized Boltzmann equation is solved for computation of any transport coefficient, then, basically these little quantities have two abelian constraints. And the fact that this is local equilibrium generates the fact that the convective derivative can be expressed in terms of macroscopic quantities. But that's well known. And basically what it amounts to at the end is that one has to solve, this is the integral equation that Sun Yong had to solve at the end or anyone computing transport coefficients. And so you solve for this chi perturbation. But what this does for you, and this is typically a number that comes from that convective derivative. And then if you know chi from this integral equation, you know your transport coefficients. But what you're doing by doing this linearized form is really to consider only the most relevant perturbative channel for the decay of these of your perturbation. So you're not really resumming anything, you're just considering a scattering channel, for, say 2-2-2 for the shear viscosity or higher ones for the bulk viscosity. And so this is in the spirit of what people had thought a long time ago. So the fact that you only include this perturbative channel is telling you something about the fact that you have a weakly coupled system and you don't have to include higher order diagrams for the decay. And that again is the leading order. At leading order, if you included the most relevant one, it gives you the number, but it doesn't not necessarily give you a more complete answer. And so again, if one, even at this level, one can include higher terms, so not linearized strictly speaking in this sense, like keeping derivatives of chi and even keeping nonlinearities if you wanted. If one is, for example, one classical example that you can look up in Landau and Lipschitz is when one is in external strong electromagnetic fields. But if one does this, the perturbative only includes this perturbative most relevant channel, then one is led to exponential decay. One has, again, a picture of dissipation that's very much like what is in cosmology books, for example. So usual, I mean, for example, something that appear in Kolben-Turner. And that has been one of the things that 1/n at leading order has been showing us. It's in a completely different physical context, is that there are other effective channels of dissipation that that lead to decay of certain excitations. But at this level, this may be appropriate under the approximations are considered. So, but if one does keep derivatives of these fluctuations, then basically one still has a self-consistent equation that generates not only the lowest order, but also generates all kinds of tree diagrams that include the lowest order. So for example, if I iterate that vertex, I can get all kinds like this. So, and processes like this are contained in that Dyson-Schwinger in the Dyson-Schwinger formulation, and they're contained as well, even though the lines mean something different. Now they mean propagators on shell in the full Boltzmann equation, not in the linearized term. So if you have reasons to suspect that processes to a higher multiplicity, to higher powers of the coupling are important, then you should be careful in the way you linearized your Boltzmann equation. So this is what had been said before in strong external fields of strong coupling. One should be careful of these terms. Okay. So finally, for phi to the fourth, San Yong has argued that basically this leading most important perturbative channel for the shear viscosity is just the four-point vertex, so describing process of two particles going to two particles. But for the bulk viscosity, you need to include higher ones, namely processes that have 2 to 4. And in order to do that, when basically at this level, one can just include diagrams in the self-energy, which are of lowest order. So this would be the first approximation at the level of Eschenschwing, as I've shown you in one of the first transparencies. However, to compute processes like this, one has to include diagrams at this order. So this includes not only a propagator resummation of this, a propagator line resummation of this sunset diagram, but also a vertex correction. These, when you open them, contribute at this order and that order, so they're the same order. And what that amounts to is to keep, if you go back to your Dyson-Schwinger formulation, terms like this. Only terms like this, so one has to have an equation for the vertex, that I think is partial answer to your question, where but at the level of Dyson-Schwinger, one resums not only, one includes not only these two, one includes them all. So all propagator lines have all these resummed and all these resummed. And that's necessary, presumably, to have self-consistency in time and energy conservation. Otherwise, one can, at the level of the Boltzmann equation, of course, it's enough to consider just perturbative channels. So one doesn't have to worry about self-consistency equations. But at the level of Dyson-Schwinger, if one wants to be regular in time, one has to resum, and that's what this is saying. So if I want to go up and infer what the Dyson-Schwinger formulation at next to leading order is that gives me this kind of diagrams, so I've been saying I should include terms in self-energy of this form and a vertex resummation. And this is basically the level that we've been describing with Christoph and Gianfranco, but these are general for unequal time correlation functions. So in a sense, doing the Dyson-Schwinger is overkill, because what you're doing is really resumming everything. And that basically summarizes the fact that it's much harder to do a self-consistent 1 over n evolution in general than to compute a transfer coefficient at leading order. Hartree at lowest order? What do you mean? You can have a variational ansatz that includes the vertex. Is that what you mean? But not, strictly speaking, next to leading order 1 over n. Okay. I'm getting to the end, actually. It's quicker than I expected. So basically, we still suffer from the problem that we can go from the Dyson-Schwinger to the Boltzmann picture, but we cannot go back. So we can only check for necessary conditions to describe the physics that we want at the end. And so I think we can say that the physics of thermalization and transport in phi to the fourth, anyway, the example I worked out right here, is contained in the Dyson-Schwinger equation truncated at next leading order 1 over n. If you pick the formulation which you you retain the full propagator and the four-point vertex with self-consistent equations. So these are your independent variables that you need to keep. And to generate the collision terms, though, one had to go through these discontinuities in time. So the time structure of the approximation seems to be important. So that's something it's not absolutely clear in my mind, but we should discuss whether the equal time correlation function evolution does have the same decay properties, because that would certainly give us a very different long time behavior. Now, one of the bottom lines is that I want to emphasize that computing transport coefficients canonically through the linearized Boltzmann equation identifies only the leading perturbative decay, and it's much easier than trying to do the whole a full 1 over n in time. So in that sense, there's a lot of work to be done there to have a first idea about how certain conserved macroscopic quantities decay in time. Of course, this problem is a lot more ambitious, and it's not clear to me at this point that because of these issues of non-locality in time and space that one can and should confront it head on. So to do this is actually much simpler, and in fact there's still quite a lot of room of things to be done, especially when one wants to relax these assumptions of very weakly coupled systems. And even at this level, there are traces of resummation that were inherited from here and of off-shellness that can be incorporated in some of these descriptions. But even at the bare description, in the sense that computing relativistic transport coefficients, there are problems that are still unsolved, especially for gauge theories. And also, it should be emphasized that even if one wants to go to some Boltzmann picture at the end of the day, modulus off-shell condition, this Dyson Schwingers plus the truncation that's consistent, say given by 1 over n, is a very important guide to give you a scheme that contains all the physics self-consistently. And for example, one description that's missing from first principles is how to describe a Boltzmann equation for QCD, in the sense that the collision terms have not been included self-consistently. There are proposals, you're involved in one of them, that in which these terms are written down, but I think in some sense based on physical arguments. So even though probably those arguments are correct, it would be nice to have a first principles derivation. Yes, so if that's all you want to answer, yeah, if that's all the answer you want out of the problem, then that probably is enough. And certainly that should be the first answer one gets out before trying to do harder things. But, so basically that's it. Thank you.
The second point is almost like a point of Lariati.
Oh, I had another transparent. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yes, if you want to do all the diagram,
yeah, but so my point is that you can use an excluding order if you are willing to work very hard to solve everything. Basically, you should have you can do transport in that context in a more general sense that you can do with kinetic theory, canonical kinetic theory, and you should also be able to describe this. But it's not clear that solving the general time-dependent problem will always take you there. So we should have some physical input, and you should maybe use it first to compute simpler quantities. Yeah, so the point is, one should keep the physics in mind and see what one needs to include in your next leading order truncation. And one should keep in mind there are physical quantities that are out there that should be computed, and there are certainly test cases for this prescription. And I think if I'm taking one thing out of this workshop, is that should be done. Certainly, to put any approximation viable ground, that should be the first thing that should be done.
Yeah,
Yes.
Not just a long time as a dynamic behavior.
And yeah.
There are unsolved problems
yes.
there.
Yes.
Then, of course, as a matter of practicality, it has to be both of them.
Mm-hmm. Right. But it's nice to have a.
But it's, I think, important conceptually to have the field theory framework in which that's embedded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's basically the point.
Yeah.
I'm still confused about the role of von Oberend in your second half, say, of your talk.
Mm-hmm.
You started towards the heading towards the Boltzmann equation.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me like if I just take the Schwinger-Dyson hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
I have an equation for the two-point function, for the three-point function, for the four-point function.
Mm-hmm.
They all say one step higher.
Mm-hmm.
If I just truncate that.
Mm-hmm.
Would that also give me good?
That contains, okay, the answer in the sense that I've formulated is that, yes, that would contain the same diagrams, the same physics with
same
different coefficients in front of them.
With different coefficients, and I would then be able to do this if n equals 1 or 2 or
yes,
whatever.
But it's the variational ansatz, in the sense, but if you're happy with that.
Would I run into trouble with, say, energy momentum conservation? Or?
I don't think you would, no. You have to show that explicitly. For every scheme, you show that explicitly. But certainly we've shown that, you know, in the limited sense of the equal time correlation functions, you conserve energy.
It's still like guided by recoupling.
Yes.
Yes. Whether it's a topologic expansion.
Absolutely.
Infinitesimally small coupling.
Mm-hmm.
And then of
that. No, but I'm not expanding the Boltzmann function. I keep its equation.
Yes.
I have a bare vertex, a full vertex, and that, but I neglect, say, the 6-point function.
That's right.
All its glory.
Yes. Yes. So that contains a little bit more physics even than the next leading order 1 over n. Or at least
yeah.
potentially more.
Because the way you used 1 over n, you were not really expanding, you were sort of resumming, and then what
mm-hmm.
sort of
well,
like
it's difficult,
the intuition was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Intuition, which
mm-hmm.
is more applicable to other theories where you don't have n.
Yes.
QCD, you got reserve.
Yes. Yes. So this is more general than 1 over n. But the 1 over n gives you a specific setting to truncate these equations.
Maybe
that is good in most circumstances. Okay.
I mean, maybe one can make a statement in the following, that the 6-point functions, the 1PI 6-point functions, do not add anything essential. I mean, once you have the 1PI 4-point function, you have all relevant physical coordinates. You have scattering, which does not conserve particle number.
Right.
But if you would. That's why from the difference is if you would truncate just the ordinary state function.
The
4-point function, then you would have no part, no number.
No.
Right.
For the 1PI 4-point function, all physics is already contained.
Mm-hmm.
No, the principle physics for all theories is contained. It may not be accurate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different
right.
question.
But you are not omitting any.
Because it's guided by
error. Yeah. I mean, the weakest coupling theory may even be quantitatively correct, but even qualitatively,
mm-hmm.
the strongly coupled theory. I mean, my point is that I want to make it, you're not losing anything.
You may have very high density, for instance.
Yeah,
sure.
It may be quantitatively wrong, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no essential physical process that is left out when you leave out the
mm-hmm.
function. I mean, because
yeah.
all the physical.
I think basically Christoph Zagin and the difference between leading order and next leading order is immense in this sense that it doesn't give you a decay
true.
Channel.
Next leading order, you know, really is a big step.
Yes.
It has it's more complicated, it's a lot more work, it's a lot more physics. So
yeah, I expected it to take longer, but I guess
it's. Congratulations.